Well, welcome everybody. This is the Global Voices Skypecast series. I'm on the line today. I'm on Skype, and I'm talking with Zachary Akine, who is in rural Andalusia, Spain. Zachary is originally from Nigeria, in fact, from the Niger Delta, and lived for many years in the UK, is now recently in Spain. She is one of Africa's most prominent and most consistently interesting bloggers. And with that intro, Zachary, I'm going to ask you to introduce yourself and maybe introduce your two blogs.
Okay, thanks, Ethan. My main blog is called Black Gloves, Musing and Rants of an African Femme. I started the blog about 10 months ago. After about, I don't know, two or three tries, what I try and do with Black Looks is highlight issues around primarily African women in Africa, but also in the diaspora. But I also focus on other, practically any issue to do with Africa and Africans in the diaspora. But I do like to focus, I do like to think primarily my focus is on African women.
And you have a new blog, a blog that you've been working on quite a bit recently. Can you talk a little bit about that?
My background is in human rights and also in technology. So I felt that there was an area of technology in Africa that I would like to kind of focus on, which is community technology. So I started another blog called Afrotechnique. However, it's proving to be actually quite difficult to find appropriate material, and especially that there are quite a number of other blogs, African blogs, that are dealing with technology in Africa. So at the moment, it's rather slow, and I'm tending to post about once a week. Though I would, you know, my intention was to try and do it a bit more often, but I'm just not being able to get the material.
It's a challenge. I try to post on a lot of the same subjects, and I know we both read Timbuktu Chronicles, which is one of the better blogs out there focused on technology in Africa. But we're all looking at the same limited number of stories. It's been hard to find that information.
Well, that's it. I mean, there have been a couple of stories that particularly relate to gender issues and technology that haven't necessarily been posted elsewhere. But, I mean, these are not things that are happening on a regular basis. So it is difficult. But if I do find a story that, I mean, there was one particular interesting story about how radio was being used to make communities aware of gender violence. And what they were doing, if I remember quite rightly, because I'm not actually looking at my blogs, I haven't actually got my computer on at the moment, is that they were recording radio programs and then sending those recordings to be heard by different women's groups in various communities.
Sure.
So I thought this was quite an innovative way of using radio and using the technology to raise awareness around gender violence. So that was something that I was able to post. And those are the sorts of things that I really, when I started the Afrotechnique, that I was actually thinking about.
And it's
what
a really
community-based.
I'm sorry, I'm cutting you off there. I was just going to say it's a really important reminder for us that when we're talking about technology in Africa, we're not always talking about internet technology. We're often talking about radio, which is a great way to reach large audiences, and in many cases a much better technique than putting content online.
Oh yes, and I mean this now. I mean, I think the big buzz in technology in Africa is mobile phone technology, and there are I mean, that's one of the things I'm reading every week. There's some new way of using mobile phone technology, whether it's to for people to vote, or solar chargers, or wind up chargers for mobile phones. I mean, there's all sorts of things around mobile phones technology.
So our audience includes people all over the world, and it includes a lot of people from the north who maybe don't have a picture of what telecommunications have historically been like in Africa. It would probably be great if you would talk a little bit about the situation with telephones in Nigeria and why it is that mobiles are so important.
Well, speaking from Nigeria, I mean, first, I mean, it's very simple. The landline telecommunications infrastructure is practically non-existent. And I mean, it's been like that, I would say, for possibly last 25 to 30 years. So, I mean, there was a time when, I remember when I was quite young, when the phones did actually work. And then there was this sort of period from the sort of 80s when it was just impossible to communicate by telephone. So mobile phones became very, very important. Just like here in London, I mean, where I live, there are no phone lines, no landlines. So without a mobile phone, you can't communicate with anybody. And the same thing was similar, which is interesting. Similar issue in Nigeria, where the telecommunications is just not the infrastructure is non-existent. So from about, I would say, 10 years ago, 10, 15 years ago, when mobile phones first came out, I mean, they took off in Nigeria amongst the elite. But what's happened in the last sort of 5 years is that they've diffused right down to the everyday ordinary man in the street who's now able to afford a phone. And so yeah, mobile phones are big business in Africa and in Nigeria and all over Africa.
This is really something we're seeing all over the continent. I know that South Africa right now is up to about 12% mobile phone penetration. And, on the one hand, South Africa is almost always the technological leader on the continent. But just north of Nigeria, up in Ghana, we're now seeing penetration of about 7 to 8%, which is quite enormous for a country that's still relatively poor. So it's interesting to see these things that might be affordable as well. Is this going to change sort of the picture that everyone has of Africa in the global media? Are we going to get better information out of Africa now that people have phones?
I don't think so, because I think one has to separate the penetration, as you call it, of mobile phones and the actual use. For example, I know people that have mobile phones, but their actual use of those phones is actually quite minimal. So you have a situation where people will only receive calls, say, from, I don't know, from overseas. They will very rarely make phone calls from their phones, and if they do, it's just a short phone call. Do you see what
Right, this is the difference in payment for how phones are working in Africa, where whoever initiates the phone call pays for it, and there's no sort of airtime charge the way that we often see in the States and in Europe. So it's made it possible. I know you must be seeing this for some of my very poor friends. They carry a phone, and it's largely to receive calls.
Exactly. So I think that's quite important. It's not just because when you talk about people having mobile phones, everyone imagines people are ringing up and talking all the time, but it's not like that. They have the mobile phones, and yes, they are being used, but how are they being used? And one thing I'm not sure about is whether they're being used for texts. For example, I don't know even in the States whether people use texts a lot, whereas here in Spain and in Britain, people are text. I mean, the texting is the main use of mobile phones is from texting, and I use my phone to text, to receive and send text far more than I do to actually phone and receive calls.
And
So I'm
that's one
not
of
sure.
those odd things that seems to be connected to economics. When SMS came to the States, it was very expensive, and therefore almost no one in the States uses it, because we're all sort of used to thinking about paying a quarter of a dollar each time we do it. I've not seen it catch on particularly well in the countries where I've worked with mobile phones, in Ghana and Senegal and Rwanda. And I'm not entirely sure why that is, but you're right. I mean, for the most part, it seems to be voice. all of this for me sort of raises a question. One question that I know that you and I often talk about is who's blogging in Africa, and how do we change that? And one of the questions, you know, you might raise is with mobile phones, can we somehow get people blogging from phones? Is that the bridge that will suddenly get people blogging from Africa, or is it going to be a much bigger challenge than that?
I think it's a much bigger challenge than that. I mean, when you look at when you think about who's blogging or why people are not blogging in Africa, I mean, there's a number of things to think about. And I mean, on a just very basic level, I mean, I was thinking about this and I thought, well, you know, it takes the average person maybe 2-3 hours to get to work. I'm talking about Nigeria now, Lagos, right. For example. It takes them 2-3 hours to get home. On rushing for a bus, queuing up for the bus, you're in the bus, it's hot, you're tired. All these things, the temperature, the humidity and everything, all these things have to be taken into consideration. So you're spending maybe 4 hours, 7-8 hours at work, 4-5 hours traveling. Just on that very basic level, are you then going to come home and start blogging?
Sure, sure.
And if you
were to come home and start blogging, you would also need to have a computer at home somehow attached to the internet. And you know, I suspect that's not nearly as common as it is for many of our listeners.
Absolutely. I mean, I would think that having a computer at home is a very elitist luxury. First of all, as I said, you've got the telephone line situation. So if you don't have the telephone line, how do you get on the internet? Well, you either do so through a mobile connection, which is extremely expensive, or you have a satellite connection. And again, it's, you know, that 5% of the Nigerian population or any African population that can afford to have a satellite connection or a mobile phone internet connection.
Right.
So on a home computer basis, you're talking of a very small minority of people, and within that 5%, you have to think of those people that are internet literate, internet interested. So that actually cuts it down even more. So the infrastructure is one problem against Africans blogging. And again, I must keep qualifying and saying I'm speaking in terms of Africa, in terms of Nigeria.
Sure, of course. We all end up speaking about the countries we know the best.
Okay. Another country that I'm quite familiar with is Morocco. Again, if you look at who's got a telephone, there you have a landline that landlines that actually work. But who owns a telephone? It's a small minority, relatively, who have got phones in their houses. So that also cuts out a lot of possible bloggers. I think the next issue is, I've mentioned to blog, I've mentioned the fact that the infrastructure. The next thing is the cyber cafes, which would be the natural place for people to go and blog who didn't have computers at home. And I must say that from my experience, both in Morocco and in Nigeria, cyber cafes are always packed out, especially in the evening. But there's still the issue of cost, because as I understand it, in Nigeria, it's about $1 an hour.
Wow, that's quite high, actually.
It's quite high. In Morocco, it's 10 dirhams, which is approximately euro. I'm not sure the exchange rate between euro and dollar, but I think that might be about a dollar something.
It'll change in the duration of us having this conversation. It's moving pretty rapidly right at the moment.
Okay. So in Morocco, it's about a dollar anyway, around about a dollar, which, you know, for myself, if I'm in Morocco or Nigeria, is not very much. But if you look at it relative to the income, the average person in Nigeria and Morocco, it's a lot of money. So you think of, you're a blogger, I'm a blogger, you think of the time that we might spend on the internet.
And then think about paying for it by the hour while sitting in a cyber cafe after carving out time from everything else that we're doing with our lives.
Well, exactly. So, I think if you just look at those three issues, you can see why a lot of people in Africa are not able to blog.
So given all of these challenges, it is really pretty impressive that we do have a lot of interesting bloggers from the continent, and also in some cases from the diaspora at this point. I'm wondering if you can tell us sort of some highlights of the Nigerian blogosphere and then maybe some other of the African blogs that you follow closely.
The Nigerian blogs I've only just recently started to search out, and it's not exactly being easy, but there are a couple of web rings. There's the ones I spoke of, the Wazova, Kanga?
Yeah, you were pointing to three rings on Zanga the other day. One appeared to be mostly Yoruba blogs, another was mostly Igbo blogs,
and
another seemed to be mostly in English.
Yeah, it was Wazoba. It's a kind of blog. Now, these are Nigerians who all seem to be in the diaspora majority. I mean, I think I might have seen one that I suspect was in Britain, but journal blogging out of the States. And judging from the profiles, they're very young people between the ages, I would say, 16 and 20, 22 maybe. Mostly seem to be women, college students. But nevertheless, I mean, it was just mind-blowing just coming across this, like, 200-plus journals by Nigerians alone.
Sure.
I haven't even got as far as looking to see if there's any other African communities part of this kind of network. But just the mere fact that there's 200-plus so far, but I'm sure there are more Nigerians blogging in the diaspora. As I said, they tend to be very journal orientated.
A few days back, you posted a little bit excerpted from Nairaland, which I believe is a message board, and there was a very political discussion going on about the Nigerian police force. Is some of this discussion sort of taking place on the message boards rather than in the blogs?
That seemed to be just on the message board, the forum, which is also interesting because, as I said, if you go to a science cafe in anywhere, well, I've been in Port Harcourt, they're always full up. And I think one of the things that people are doing is actually emailing and chatting on various forums.
So this might actually be an interesting place to look for some of the voices coming out of Nigeria is looking more in the forums and less in the blogs.
Yeah, I think you'd be right there because if you think about it in terms of time, as we've just said, actually blogging takes up time. So if you're paying $1 an hour and you need to be on 10 hours a week, that's $10 a week. It's a lot of money. Whereas if you're on a forum, you don't need to be there every day. You can just be there for half an hour and have a chat and then go. Do you see what I mean? So I think
it's
a lot cheaper and a lot easier, a lot less intense way of expressing yourself than actually having a blog, which requires much more input and much more commitment, which people, you know, for the reasons we've talked about, don't necessarily have.
Right, and certainly the sort of commitment required to put together a blog like yours, where you're putting up a number of substantive posts every day. How much time do you find yourself spending on blogging, and why is this such a priority for you?
It varies, but I mean sometimes I might not spend any time at all. I try and not do any blogging now on Saturdays and Sundays. But other than that, I would say at least 1 to 2 hours.
Right.
It depends because I don't tend to sit at the computer for a long time because I have a bad back. So I'm up and down, which means that I spend longer because every time I sit down, I have to sort of rethink where I left off. I know, but I would say, I mean, like the piece you mentioned on the DRC, it actually took me quite a long time to do because I kept on having to refer to different websites and check things and, you know, trying to, you know, getting up and sitting down at the same time. So it actually took me a couple of hours, whereas if I did other posts might just take me, I don't know, 20 minutes.
So let's just back up and talk about that post for just a moment. You ran a post today, a terrific post, which I linked to, about a Human Rights Watch report on the Democratic Republic of Congo. And this is something that's actually quite unique about your blog. You tend to blog a great deal about human rights issues in Africa, and there's not a tremendous amount of coverage of this. Maybe you want to talk a little bit about the Congo story, but I'm also very interested in this sort of general concept of what it means to blog for human rights.
I mean, for my blog, as I said, my background is in human rights and an activist in human rights. So human rights is always at the forefront of whatever of most things that I'm actually blogging, even if I'm sort of trying to put a little bit of humor into my blog, which I feel like I need to do sometimes because it seems like it gets overtly serious, over the top serious. So yes, human rights is very important, and I think it's one of the issues that we need to focus on in Africa because there are so many human rights violations. I mean, again, if I go back to Nigeria, I mean, you know, there was a post on Kenyan Pundit the other day saying, you know, are there any sort of positive, something to do with positive stories coming out of Africa? And I mean, I think if posting on human rights is actually being quite positive.
Mm.
I think the tendency is to think, oh, every time I look at this blog, there is something negative because it's like either a criticism or it's bringing up a human rights issue. But I think that is actually positive, that I and others are actually raising these human rights issues and repeatedly posting them over and over again. So, for example, this post on the DRC, which came out, which I did initially because of the human rights report that came out today on the role of the Anglo Gold Ashanti in supporting the one of the nationalist
the FNI
rebel
yeah.
groups yep. In the Congo. But it also relates back to a post I made three, 4 months ago, which also exposed the actions of various multinationals, the CIA, President of the United States, the Secretary of Defense, and so on and so forth. So it relates back to that as well. So I'm trying to say that the story is not just this human rights report of today. It also goes back to 3 months ago, 2 years ago, and so on and so forth. So people can actually see that this isn't just happening today, that there's a build-up and there's a background and there's a history to this particular story. I think that is positive.
Not only is it positive, I think it ends up being fascinating. I'm perpetually amazed that the story about Eastern Congo isn't in the newspapers on the front pages every single day, mm-hmm. because it's this complicated, sinister, incredibly important story that could come right out of a Tom Clancy novel. And it seems to involve people from almost every major government in the world. And yet it gets blogged about and talked about and written about sort of purely as a human rights story. Are there ways that we can start using our blogs to sort of change how these stories are perceived on a wide scale?
Gosh, that's a hard one, Ethan. You caught me off guard there. I don't even know where to begin. I don't know. I mean, for me, what I'm trying to do is that, you know, I'm hoping that some of the people reading what I'm writing are people that are not familiar with Africa, say, for example, like yourself. But people who are unfamiliar with Africa unfamiliar with the issues. And maybe what they know about Africa is they know about famine, they know about conflict and the war, but they don't know how their own country, whether it's United States or Europe or China, how that those countries, how they're involved in what is actually happening in Africa. Do you see what I mean?
Absolutely. So you were writing the other day about this phrase, the struggle for Africa. Maybe you can say a bit more about that.
Oh, the scramble for Africa.
Yes.
Oh, yes. I suddenly, I don't know, over the past week, there's been a number of stories in various British newspapers and the BBC, The Guardian, The Independent, which have used this phrase, scramble for Africa. So I just made a little post, basically, which I'm reading here, which says scramble for Africa seems to be the new media buzz phrase. Here's more from today's Guardian, this time referring to the scramble for oil and diamonds, as opposed to the original one for territory, which in actual fact was also for diamond. It wasn't for oil, but it was for diamonds and other resources.
And then before that, a struggle for rubber.
Exactly. So, you know, this scramble has come up, and it's interesting because that story came up, and then today the story, the DRC, which is another scramble for Africa, but this time it's for gold. And then a couple of days before that, there was another, if I can find it, it was the story, the Africa brain drain story, which is another kind of scramble for Africa, but this time in terms of not natural resources, but human resources. So in 1 week, there's been three sort of different stories about, with this phrase, scramble for Africa, used by the media. Do you see what I mean? So I've tried to sort of like link them up.
Absolutely. Do you think this is a big geopolitical trend? Do you think that Africa is sort of becoming a pawn in geopolitical struggles again, or is this sort of more a way of organizing a lot of small conflicts?
No, I think it's actually becoming a pawn. I mean, somewhere today, I'm not sure which of the papers. I mean, I've tried to read so many. Someone said something. Oh no, I think it wasn't the story. It was actually, I was chatting with a friend of mine a Nigerian friend in London, and he was saying, "Yeah, you know, Africa's like the new buzzword. You know, it's kind of like the new in thing." I think it all started with Tony Blair's speech a couple of years ago,
and suddenly everyone's listening to Bob Geldof again.
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, it's so, you know, backward thinking, this whole Geldof thing. But so suddenly, you know, Africa is a buzzword. If you look at the papers, there's so many articles in the last week about Africa. I mean, there's one in The Independent today, which was pretty awful. I haven't blogged on it, which was describing the state of Africa, the corruptness of its leaders, the dictators, tin pot governments, and, you know, it's all sort of in that vein. And I, you know, obviously you can't blog everything, so I chose not to mention that one. But I think it is something about being Africa is a new buzz thing, and it is an area of interest for its resources. And also, there's the other story around Africa, which is the U.S. and U.S.'s war on terror,
right,
and how Africa is being sort of named as the next continent where terrorism is going to be some kind of breeding ground. And I know Chipler's done a couple of things on that, posts on that Chipler's blog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I have mentioned it a couple of times also in relation to Nigeria and also to the Sahara countries, Mali, Niger,